Welcome to Sustainability Unraveled, a podcast presented by TÜV SÜD, in which we explore the intricate world of sustainability and unravel complex topics for you. I'm Laura Oberhausen, your host, and I'm joined by my co-host Cornelia Stamm.
Hey everyone, and a warm welcome to all our listeners. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode, where we shed a light on a new crucial aspect of sustainability.
The title of this episode is Green and Sustainable Industry, Technologies for a Renewable Energy Future. So, what can you expect? Today we will discuss the solutions driving the transition towards a greener tomorrow, focusing on the most promising technologies, challenges, and future trends in decarbonization.
Set the stage. Let's understand the urgency of the situation. Industries around the globe are under immense pressure to reduce their carbon footprint and embrace renewable energy alternatives. The industrial sector stands as a significant contributor to carbon emissions, making it imperative for us to explore avenues for decarbonization. From manufacturing to production, every facet of industry holds the key to unlocking a cleaner and greener tomorrow.
Right. And with the development of storage technologies such as Power2X, we have the potential to rethink traditional industrial processes and pave the way for a sustainable future. For those who don't know the term Power2X, it describes all processes that convert renewable energy into chemical energy carriers for uses such as electricity storage, electricity-based fuels for transportation, and raw materials for the chemical industry. In this process, hydrogen is produced by electrolysis. Another fact that adds context to today's episode is that, according to economic research, hydrogen could account for more than 20% of annual global emissions reductions by 2050. And many stakeholders expect hydrogen to play a critical role in the decarbonization of industry.
Besides that, we have a series of other evolving technologies, including carbon capture, utilization and storage, also known as CCUS, each acting as players in decarbonizing our world. In fact, the International Energy Agency projects that CCUS might account for up to 15% of the cumulative emission reduction needed by 2070 to achieve our net zero goals.
The transition to renewable energy is not a choice, but a necessity for businesses that want to thrive in a rapidly changing landscape. For example, the global renewable energy market is expected to reach $1.5 trillion by 2025, driven by the increasing demand for sustainable and clean energy solutions. If you are particularly interested in this topic, you can also listen to another one of our episodes called From Source to Storage, The Path to Green Energy Transition.
Whether you're an industry stakeholder, a renewable energy advocate, or simply curious about the future of the industry, let's unravel the complexities of decarbonizing our industry and unlock the potential of energy storage technologies and other innovations to shape a brighter future.
Today, we'll be looking into the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead as we navigate towards a more sustainable and resilient future. So, without further ado, I'm really honored to welcome today's guest, Tore Lapp, an expert in renewable energy and decarbonization strategies. It's great to have you here. Let's start with the first question to get to know you a little bit better. What is your background and your expertise in this field?
First of all, thanks for having me, Laura and Cornelius. Just a little information on my background. I studied energy technology in Gießen several years ago and backed this up by studies in St. Gallen with the focus on digital transformation. After being 12 years within TÜV SÜD Group now, I'm responsible since 2020 for the global business unit Green Energy and Sustainability, with roughly 700 people on the ground now and active basically in all major countries of the world. And I had the great chance really to see the development from 2020 to today, how the world is changing the mindset, how the world is changing in the context of sustainability. Whereas in the beginning, 2020, just being a PowerPoint presentation or a marketing project is now becoming into real projects. So that is the switch that is taking place from PowerPoint to power plants, basically. So sustainability is really transported into real life slowly, but thank goodness, surely.
As you just said, there's a lot of buzz around sustainability. And in particular, there's a lot of talk these days about green and sustainable energy. What does green and sustainable industry mean to you?
First of all, for me, sustainability is not to be seen as standalone. Sustainability came to stay. I fully agree that unfortunately today, some companies or whatsoever are still of the hope that sustainability is just a hype and will disappear suddenly. And that is definitely not the case. So it came to stay. And that is the good thing about it. And what do I do personally in the context of sustainability for me? Of course, otherwise I couldn't do this job. It's deeply implemented into my private life as well. Looking at the kids' education, looking at the things we buy at home, raising awareness for circular economy. But when you buy things, does it really have to be a diesel engine again, or should you maybe switch to some new technology? So that is really in my life. It's really not differentiated between work and private life. So I'm really, really proud to a certain degree. Even in my job, I can have a big impact in transparency and decarbonization efforts on a global basis, starting with the steel industry, via chemical industry. That is all the areas where we are active in.
That's really, really interesting, especially how you, let's say, walk the talk also in your personal life. And you mentioned earlier that you've seen sustainability evolving a lot, especially in the last few years. So considering the current landscape, what do you see are the most promising technologies driving the renewable energy sector?
Right. That is a good question. I would like to elevate this to a higher level, because there is not one single solution or one single technology that will save the world now. In the end, it's a mix of different technologies depending on the use. And one important technology is power to X or power to gas, in order to store renewable energy in green hydrogen, in this case, for example. So in itself, the whole change from a conventional world to a sustainable world is a very complex thing we all have to do, and there is no one single solution for decarbonizing, for example. It's a bouquet of activities that need to be addressed and that need to be driven by the industry as well as the governments, as well as at home.
When we spoke previously, you also mentioned the point of digitalization. So could you also explain how that topic and sustainability are connected?
I'm certain that sustainability and digitization will not work without a marriage to each other. So that means, for example, that the Internet of Things, IoT 4.0, is entering and will be entering our business to a big degree. That means that the operational management of wind farms, PV parks will be and is being supported by smart operation systems in order to really get the maximum out of a wind farm, for example, in order to maximize the efficiency and so on. And one example is which I would like to provide is that as of today, when a client asks us for a product carbon footprint, we are doing this based on an annual average. Up to today, this is fully okay, but we already see tendencies and requests from the market that the journey will be from an average annual product carbon footprint more to a real-time basis. So the market as well as the consumer, they want to know what is the real-time carbon footprint of the ton of steel being produced last Friday, or maybe even the steel being produced the day before. And that can differentiate depending on the process, on the energy being used. And that will only work with deep marriage between digitization and sustainability, because that immediately brings us to e-certification and blockchain technology, for example.
We briefly touched on the concept of power to X in our introduction. And Tore, you also mentioned the PTX technology in your answer earlier. Now let's get a little bit more into the details. Can you please give us some background on this technology and how does it actually fit into the journey to decarbonize the industry?
Power-to-X technology is basically required to store the energy being produced by renewable energy sources. Via electrolyzers, water can be split into hydrogen, H2, and oxygen, O2. This is important since we need electricity when we need it. We want to push the button, we want to start a machine when we want to start it, and not when the wind is blowing or the sun is shining. And therefore, it's essential that we can store the energy with this power-to-X/electrolyzer technology.
And talking about hydrogen, I mean, this is nothing new, as this field has been developing since the 1700s. So why do you think it is becoming more and more popular and gaining more awareness recently?
As you correctly stated previously, power-to-X or power-to-gas technologies or hydrogen itself is not new to us or new to the world. There has always been byproducts. It has always been used in the chemical industry. There has always been feedstock as hydrogen. But to be honest, the volume and the stake, the volume and the scale that is needed now, that is the challenge that we have to face. Because if we really want to switch to a net zero future by 2045 in Germany or 2050 in Europe, you need huge and massive volumes of green energy, hydrogen, and that is basically the major challenge, so to say, in order to produce the required amount of hydrogen.
As we look to the future, there's a growing interest in how these technologies can be integrated into existing systems. How do you see Power2X, but also hydrogen being integrated into existing industrial processes? And what potential disruptions or transformations do you foresee?
After all, as mentioned earlier, we have to reach net zero by 2045 in Germany, 2050 in Europe, 2070, I think, in India, and so on and so forth. So each country has its own decarbonization targets or net zero targets. And what I think is required is the ramp up and the build up of decentralized hydrogen ecosystems. That means the journey away from a power plant centrally, and then the electricity is distributed via land links, that needs to change into more decentralized hydrogen ecosystems where you have an electrolyzer or you have a hydrogen production or hydrogen income, and the users, the applications basically for this hydrogen is around that ecosystem. And when you have enough local ecosystems in the country, Germany for example, then in the next steps these ecosystems will be connected to hydrogen valleys, and in the next extent you have basically a countrywide hydrogen system with production, distribution, where it's needed.
And how does the current infrastructure look like? Is it really well prepared for all the upcoming changes?
That in the end depends on the country we are looking at. Looking at Germany, to be honest, is quite developed in the integration of renewable energy. We invested, I think, 3 point something billion euros last year or the last 2 years in order to avoid or implement certain measures to avoid grid congestion, which basically means that we are fitting up the existing net in order to distribute the energy from the coast and so on. We are building transportation links and transportation lines from north to south. So we are quite advanced here, but it needs to be more updated in order to really suit the needs and distribute the energy which will be produced. So you see that is already complex just talking about the distribution of the energy. And that is only Germany. So, but what we have to look at is the European net. And then looking at Poland, for example, who are of course also starting to develop hydrogen strategies, for example, but they are not so far as Germany yet, for example, and that is a challenge in the grid connections between Germany and Poland and other countries, for example.
And thanks, Tore. You just mentioned Europe, so I'm wondering, what is the status quo in other parts of the world? So what's your view on the level of adoption of renewable energy technologies, and are there things that countries can learn from each other in terms of policy and technology implementation?
So one thing is clear by now, that each single country in the world is aware that the energy transition, decarbonization, defossilization, sustainability efforts are ongoing and will not go away. That is for sure. That was certainly different 1, 2, 3 years ago. So that is the case that all major countries are onboarded and have strong mitigation targets and measures in place. On the other side, the big industry players, the big brands are also following and pushing hard decarbonization strategies into their supply chain. And that means when a German brand, for example, or an American brand are pushing decarbonization measures and targets into their supply chain, and the suppliers are basically on a global basis, and that implies that on a global basis, these measures, these decarbonization measures are taking place. So without any legal push, the decarbonization is ongoing, pushed mainly by the industry, even though the regulatory or the compliance landscape is not fully provided yet, and it will still take a while. But the industry is still going ahead and still pushing it into the supply chain. And that, I think, is really wonderful to see that this is really taking place and happening.
The points you just mentioned underline that it is mainly about scaling up, right? So usually some challenges are involved in this. Could you describe some of these and maybe also how they can be overcome?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, basically. The biggest challenge is scale. As I mentioned above, the commitment from the countries, from the industry is there. But the scale, once with the view on the amount of energy needed, so the volume of hydrogen being needed, is massive, which of course directly implies that you need a huge amount of electrolyzers, for example. And that of course again involves the supply chain and the manufacturing speed. So that is, if you asked me, that is the biggest challenge to really suit the needs of that green electricity. And that brings me to the point that when you look at the Green Deal of the European Union, for example, that all industries in parallel have to start now to decarbonize in order to reach 2050, 45, 70, whatsoever targets. And in order to bridge this gap, because it will take, if you asked me, 8 to 10 years until we have enough electrolyzers, until the distribution network is laid out, until we have enough PV plants and wind plants being established to produce green energy, which you need for green hydrogen, until then, it's absolutely certain, and it's already taking place, that the so-called blue hydrogen, blue ammonia, will be the bridge until we have enough green energy to suit really this green energy need. And just as a side information, blue hydrogen basically means it's low carbon hydrogen, because the hydrogen being produced, the CO2 being produced by this, is basically stored. It's with the so-called CCS technology, carbon capture storage, or in America, for example, or the Middle East countries, they do so-called enhanced oil recovery, which is being used, the CO2 is being used and stored in empty oil fields, basically, which is taking place on a global basis. Yeah.
And what's also interesting, maybe a side note from my side, is that we also developed a low carbon hydrogen standard.
That's true, because we talk about colors. Actually, I'm trying to get a little distance from green hydrogen, blue hydrogen, because in the end, the only thing that matters is the CO2 profile of hydrogen being produced and transported. So in the end, coming back to the colors, once hydrogen, ammonia, whatsoever is produced, you can, of course, not differentiate, is it gray hydrogen, is it green hydrogen, is it blue hydrogen. Therefore, the corresponding certification for this is essential to really have the given proof that this hydrogen is blue or green or has a certain CO2 profile. And this is what we did for a global oil and gas player. It's ADNOC company, Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, based in UAE, headquartered in Abu Dhabi, and we were contacted a while ago if we can support this certification process for basically a low carbon hydrogen. And this is what we did. And a few days ago, I think the press release went out from ADNOC side that basically a huge volume based on this certification has been shipped to Japan, if I'm not mistaken. So that was basically one of the first use cases we have to really assure that the hydrogen being produced / ammonia has really the values that the company is claiming for. Because otherwise the risk is tremendous when companies issue certain statements and there is no given proof by a third party. The greenwashing trap is really, really big in this case. In general.
Tori, you briefly mentioned facilitators, and I see TÜV Süd as one of them. So my final question is, what is the role the company is playing in ensuring the compatibility and safety of these new technologies?
I mean, TÜV Süd, since 150 plus years, has been responsible for safety, for life, assets and environment. And this DNA we are, of course, not going to leave. However, in this context, our main role is to provide the highest degree in transparency to decarbonization efforts. And that basically means that for once, you of course need a certain transparency, product carbon footprints and so on, in order to gain a global market access. The ADNOC example, for example, they can only sell their products when they have the corresponding certification, in this case, to be accepted by the Japan market. And on the other side, there is a big part which is not regulated yet, as we mentioned in the beginning. So you have a regulated compliance part and B, a non-regulated voluntary part. And that is essential, that A plus B is the highest degree in transparency you can provide. And this is exactly where TÜV Süd is very active on a global basis to support the industry, governments in each country, to have this transparency provided, for example. Next to the classical aspects of handling hydrogen, safety aspects, risk mitigation. So this transparency basically came on top of it in order to really make sure that the industry is not doing any greenwashing activities and really the world is moving towards a cleaner 2050, because I really think that is essential to stop global warming.
Thanks. And there's one last point I would like to address. We, and I'm sure you as well, often hear the question, how does the business strategy need to be adjusted to improve the competitiveness and profitability of a company and be indeed sustainable?
Yeah. And that is something I experienced the last 4 years also, that in the beginning there was a separate sustainability strategy, completely aside of a business strategy. And it was seen as an investment mostly allocated at marketing departments. And that, of course, is a big mistake, because as mentioned before, sustainability will not go away. It came to stay. And that means sustainability efforts must be profitable. And that means that in your business strategy that you have in order to produce your products, your consultancy work, your whatever your core DNA of your company is, if you don't implement the sustainability or the sustainable approach and DNA into your business strategy, then you will most likely fail, because sustainability will be seen as an investment that will pull down your profit. And then sooner or later, you're running into a problem that you could avoid by installing and implementing sustainability right deeply rooted into your business strategy.
Thank you very much, Tore, for being our guest today. As we draw to a close on today's episode, let's reflect on the key learnings we've uncovered. Let's start with the significance of decarbonization. Industries globally are under immense pressure to reduce their carbon footprint and transition to renewable energy sources. Decarbonization is critical for achieving net zero emission goals. The renewable energy market is definitely growing rapidly, with expectations to reach $1.5 trillion by 2025. Embracing sustainable technologies not only helps in environmental conservation, but also provides economic benefits by ensuring market competitiveness and cost savings.
We also learned that PTX technology is critical for energy storage and industrial decarbonization. Hydrogen produced through electrolysis can significantly contribute to reducing global emissions. Additionally, technologies such as carbon capture, utilization and storage, and the integration of digitalization with sustainability are driving the transition towards greener industries. These innovations are essential for achieving real-time carbon footprint tracking and efficient energy management.
Investments in grid expansion and modernization are essential to accommodate the increasing share of renewable energy. Different infrastructure projects aim to develop extensive hydrogen pipeline infrastructure, enhancing grid stability and enabling cross-border electricity exchange to support the growing demand for new renewable energy.
And one of the biggest challenges in the transition to renewable energy is scaling up production and deployment. The market currently struggles to produce enough electrolyzers for green hydrogen production. This means that there is a need to bridge the gap with low carbon energy sources in the meantime.
The adoption of renewable energy technologies varies between regions. Countries' progress can set benchmarks, and countries can learn from each other's experiences, as seen between Germany and Poland, for example. Is there anything you would like to add, Tore?
Yeah, I can only state finally from my side, be active, be proactive, implement sustainability efforts for decarbonization, circular economy into your business strategy, and become first and prime movers. This is essential, or could be essential, for you to save market shares, but also with a link on our private lives. 1,000 grams make a kilo. So it's always essential that each family, each household and so on is really starting in the small to be more active and at least be aware on sustainability matters. And I think if this is being done on a global basis, we are far ahead.
Thanks. Those were really nice closing words. And also, again, thank you for being our guest and sharing your value-adding and interesting insights for our listeners. And to everyone out there, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Sustainability Unraveled.
Great to have you on board, exploring topics ranging from corporate sustainability to emerging trends across different sectors. Feedback is invaluable to us, so please don't hesitate to contact us with your thoughts or suggestions for future episodes.
Make sure also to subscribe to our podcast to be notified about new episodes. Thank you for being part of our journey, and talk to you soon.